It's the idea that when we see a fault in ourselves, we don't become depressed.
Yeah.
We actually become excited.
Wow.
Because we didn't see that before.
Yes.
Right? So we had no idea what it was we were meant to be working on.
Yeah.
Right? When we lie to ourselves or we cheat, effectively we cheat others, then we're hiding our potential to change and to rectify. You know this word atonement?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can break it down. At one-ment. To become at one again with, you know, our higher power.
I love that.
Before we jump into this episode, I'd love to invite you to join this Candid Spiritual community to hear more conversations that will help you become happier, healthier, and more healed. All I want you to do is click on that subscribe button because I love your support. I love seeing all the comments pouring through, all the love pouring through, and we're just getting started. I can't wait to go on this journey with you, whether you're a spiritual seeker or you're just curious about the topic. And we really hope that our conversations will provide you food for thought and inspiration for your own spiritual journey. So join us for honest, candid discussions about spirituality for soul's sake.
For soul's sake, for soul's sake.
Hello and welcome to another episode of For Soul's Sake, an incredible special with two of my friends where we are coming together to discuss the Bhagavad Gita, bhakti teachings, spiritual truth that hopefully will help you to transform and live a happier lifestyle. I'm here again with my mates Nam and Kaylee, and we are discussing another theme. What's the theme today, lads?
How to fall upwards.
Isn't that the title of a book?
Yeah, Falling Upwards.
Isn't that the title of one of your songs?
Yeah, the book was written by Cistercian monk and author Richard Rohr.
Mm.
If you haven't read the book Falling Upwards, I highly, highly recommend it.
Mm-hmm.
It's this idea that spiritual life and spiritual progress isn't always linear.
Yeah.
Right.
And, you know, I was speaking to a friend recently who left the church. They're a Christian and they left the church.
Meaning they're done with it.
Well, for now.
Right.
They have this term in the church called backsliding, right? Okay. Which is like, you failed, basically,
oh,
right?
Wow.
You're a sinner or you failed or whatever it is.
We call it bloop.
Blooping, falling down.
Shunned from the community, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah. And you see this a lot in even secular community, scientific community, right? Mm. Someone proposes an idea that goes against the, you know, the considered paradigm of the times.
Mm.
And so they don't make it into the New Scientist magazine that week or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I was personally interested in this topic because I feel like anyone who tells you their spiritual life has been an easy, seamless journey is probably not telling the entire truth.
Yeah.
100%, yeah.
Go on, what were you going to say?
Yeah, I don't think there is such thing as an easy spiritual life. There was a beautiful quote I love from Srila Prabhupada, who obviously translated the very modern version of the Gita, and he said that an easy life and advancement in your bhakti don't go together. An easy
That's
life...
That's a mic drop moment.
...an advancement in your spiritual journey, they don't go together.
Mm.
It's just not the way the cookie crumbles, you know? It's just not the way we do things. We learn through volatility. I know, like, I look at my life and I think the most challenging periods in my spiritual life that I've had was after my monastic days. So it's almost as if my monastic and the days within the ashram, I was learning things, learning about myself, learning the philosophy, learning how to practice it, learning how to apply it. But I don't feel I really understood how to apply it until I met life's true exams that come afterwards, and it comes at you like a bolt.
Mm-hmm.
And if you forget the lessons that you learn, you just end up in a very hard situation.
High, dry, and hairy.
Yeah. And so therefore, like, I think volatility, it creates opportunity. You know, like in the investment market, right? Volatility in the stock market is a chance to gain major profits. But I think that's the same for spiritualists as well. I think like volatile life situations, when approached with sincerity, can teach us a lot about ourselves. I know it's definitely taught me so much about myself, but also put me in a much stronger foundation for moving forward in my life.
Yeah.
I mean, to quote His Holiness Kayleigh Woods, he said, I mean, you got it from somewhere as well, but you said that you learn more from rock bottoms than mountain tops. Mm. And that's one of my all-time favorite quotes.
Yeah.
So should we get into the verse?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's go.
All right. Translation. This is from chapter 9 of the Bhagavad Gita, text number 30. Even if one commits the most abominable action, if he is engaged in devotional service, he is to be considered saintly because he is properly situated in his determination.
Hmm. I remember the first time I read that. I found that a very difficult thing to swallow.
Why?
Because this verse is basically talking about someone who's gone for a bit of a struggle, mm-hmm. you know, gone for a bit of a trip up, but they're still to be considered a saintly person because they're practicing whatever it may be. Now, that's under the assumption that they're sincere enough in their practice. Because mm-hmm. there's many like charlatans out there, right? Many charlatans out there giving it the big one in a particular practice, but behind the scenes, it's all going haywire.
Yep.
So I think judging like the intent of someone is such a difficult thing because it's not seen. You can't see it. Maybe you can feel it, but I don't know. Don't know what you guys think.
Do you know, I think people misunderstand the Bhagavad Gita and yeah. spiritual texts in that way. Yeah. Because when we read a verse like this, we think, this is how I should see another person.
Yeah.
Rather than thinking, this is how I should see
it's
myself.
It's about me.
Exactly.
It's about me. Yeah. Radhanath Swami says that you can tell the spiritual quality or character of someone by observing, well, you can't really observe, but I guess it's talking about ourselves, by observing what they do when no one else is watching. Mm. And if we are dead honest about what our character involves when no one else is watching, the kind of activities that we do. Mm. I mean, do I dare mention www.
Yeah.
You know, if you know, you know. The activities that we do behind closed doors really speak volumes about our character. Because it's so easy. I mean, take it from me. It's so easy to present something that in reality you're not. It's easy. You just put a nice camera, some lighting in the room. You say a deep message into the camera, down the barrel. And then people perceive you as being deeply spiritual.
Yeah.
But little do they know that there's so much to be purified inside this heart. So much that needs to be purified. So I love how we're making this. Let's not make this about spiritual leaders who have fallen down.
Yeah.
Let's make this about, totally about us.
Yeah.
You know?
So in this book, Falling Upwards, the author Richard Rohr has this sentence. He says, the closer we get to the light, the more of our shadow we see.
Wow. Mm. Wow, wow, wow.
So, and it's interesting, the people who, in my experience, proclaim to be enlightened are usually the ones that are furthest away. Mm. And the ones that, we were in a room with your spiritual master recently, your spiritual teacher.
Yeah.
And he was saying, I'm not very advanced. I just like to chant. Right?
I mean, just that alone is like, I don't like chant.
Yeah, if you knew this personality, everyone knows this is an advanced soul. This is a real, genuinely saintly person. But you get the feeling that he doesn't see himself like that.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And so it raises the question, how do we balance this feeling of knowing that we're not the finished product, knowing that we're going to fall down, knowing that the bar is super high and we're not always going to reach it, but the determination remains, right?
Mm. Yeah. I think in the fallbacks of life, in the fallbacks of, you know, your own spiritual journey, it's the willingness, not even the motivation sometimes, the willingness just to keep connected with the practice.
Mm.
Because you have enough faith that the practice will hold you, that the spiritual relationships you have around you will hold you and pull you forward. Without that, there's no chance we're reaching any sort of heights or spiritual realizations. But we're so reliant on the potency of the practices and the spiritual community around us who are strong and motivating and, you know, invested individuals in our life. And I think sometimes when I think about that, is that I have a chance because someone else has taken a chance on me.
Mm.
I have a chance because I've got one or two people who care about me.
Mm.
And if I keep connected as part of my practice, as part of my sangha, and my community, then I'll be okay.
Yeah, and that can become a service as well, you know. Totally. This idea of we rise by lifting others.
Yeah.
I heard this example of, you know, they say mad as a box of frogs. You've heard that saying?
No.
Someone says, oh, that person's mad as a box of frogs, right? If you see a box of frogs, if you open the lid on this box, then you'd think all the frogs would just jump out, right? But actually what starts to happen is as one frog climbs out, the other one pulls the other frog down and tries to get ahead and get out. And when that frog sees that one's doing that, they pull that one down and they try and get out. So actually, spiritual life, I feel, works really nicely when it's the opposite. We think we rise by lifting others, right? That's actually how we make progress, and that can become a service even for us, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally.
Something that I found, I've got this on my notes, so I wasn't just scrolling on Instagram. I don't know if that shot got in there, but I was looking for this bit that's been sparked while you both were speaking, and it's from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So he is the guru of Prabhupada, who's written the commentary on the Gita that we're reading. And he explains that the conditioned living soul, the conditioned living entity, has four defects.
Right.
Imperfect senses.
Mm-hmm.
We're prone to be illusioned.
Mm-hmm.
We make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And the fourth one, we have a propensity for cheating.
Mm.
Now, three of those things we can do diddly squat about.
Mm.
Yeah.
Right, imperfect senses. We can't just wake up one day and go, I'm going to have 20/20 vision today.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm going to hear, like, I don't know, I'm going to hear as well as a bat.
Mm.
We've got imperfect senses, right? That's the first thing. To be illusioned, again, can't do it. Can't do anything about it. You're going to get illusioned. You're going to see one thing and then be illusioned to see it as another thing. Make mistakes. We can't, I mean, there's no single person who's ever been born on this material world that hasn't made a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
But the fourth thing, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he said that this should be avoided. The propensity for cheating. And the fact that we're going to have imperfect senses, I've written it here, the fact that we're going to have imperfect senses, we can do nothing about that. We fall into illusion, etc., etc., etc. But that propensity to cheat we should avoid, because there's this tendency in cheating to cover things up,
right,
to brush it under the carpet, to lock it in the cupboard, so that no one else sees it, to present ourselves to the world as something that we're not.
Yeah.
And I think that this verse really kind of strongly advises, and it's like I'm telling it to myself, like, be really careful about what you're presenting to the world if behind closed doors you're not living that.
Yeah.
You know? Because that's something we can do something about.
Mm.
So if at least, I mean, if at the end of this lifetime I don't achieve pure chanting, I think the root of it, of course, is inattention and, you know, not enough love for God and whatnot. But I think a root of the root of the root of that is that I've just cheated myself.
Right.
Of not being able to admit that I've got some issues.
Yeah, yeah. The only person who suffers at the end of the day is us.
Okay, we've kind of put people down in the dumps now. It's like, how do we rise up? What's the falling upwards bit? What's the upwards bit?
Hmm.
What does that look like? So, okay, we're recognizing we're crap, we make mistakes, we're illusioned, we're cheating people all the time. But now let's look on the positive side. What does it look like to fall upwards?
Hmm. Well, I think in the verse, the main word for me is determination, right?
Tell me more.
Well, it's the idea that when we see a fault in ourselves, we don't become depressed.
Yeah.
We actually become excited.
Wow.
Because we didn't see that before.
Yes.
Right? So we had no idea what it was we were meant to be working on.
Yeah.
Right? When we lie to ourselves or we cheat, effectively, we cheat others, then we're hiding our potential to change and to rectify. You know this word, atonement?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can break it down. At one moment. To become at one again with, you know, our higher power.
I love that.
So this is how people ask me, like, you know, you lived as a monk and you're trying to build, you know, your career now and remain a spiritual person in the material world. How do you remain happy whilst doing that?
Yeah.
And I think this is the key piece for me personally, is not becoming deterred when I see something I have to work on, but instead being like, oh, great, now I know this thing I didn't see before, this envy or this greed or this anger or this lust.
I spotted it. Yeah.
Now I can see it. Now I know what I have to work on. So it becomes a catalyst. It becomes, you know, I feel encouraged then.
You can't target something you can't see, right?
Exactly.
Once Srila Prabhupada, he was like looking into a corner.
Right.
And he asked his disciple, he says, when you look in that corner, what do you see?
Mm.
And the disciple responded, I don't see anything, Prabhupada.
Right.
And Prabhupada responded, I see the dust.
Mm.
That means Krishna has allowed me to see the dust and you to see nothing.
Mm.
And I think that exactly what you said, that it should excite us, that I've got life to live. I've got something to aim towards. I've got something to purify in this lifetime. Rather than shoving it down the carpet and underneath the carpet and trying to ignore it. But I've got something to live for. Sometimes we think that living means that we have to make a living.
Mm.
Yeah.
Right? But in loving and serving, we make a life. We've heard that quote before, that by getting things, we make a living, but by loving and serving, we make a life. But the point is that we can't love and serve unless we recognize that I've got some way to go to learn how to love, or got a way to go to learn how to serve. I need to recognize the dust in the corner.
Mm.
And I think in that process as well, like there's recognizing the dust, and then there's identifying with the dust.
Mm.
Our mistakes aren't us.
Hot,
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Recognize the dust,
yeah,
but we don't identify with the dust.
Mm.
The dirt and the mistake isn't us. So I think I was watching a video the other day, and it was basically saying that no matter what mistakes you go through your life, you need to understand the potential of the spirit. You have to understand the true potential of what the spirit is capable of, and faith and understanding of that will help pull yourself from the dark ditches that we all find ourselves in and the mistakes that we make in our life.
Mm.
Because the alternative is we identify as the mistake. And the mistake's always going to exist and might happen again.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens to our sense of self-confidence, you know, our own empathy, our own identification? Yeah. We can't move. We have no North Star to move towards, right? Because we don't know who we are and what the potential of that spirit truly is.
Mm.
Yeah, it's like taking a glass of water, putting some soil in it and stirring it up. And if we simply keep stirring, which means associating with that dust, we will never see that over time, if we're just patient and we just adhere to some simple principles of spirituality, that the soil and the water will separate, given enough time. Like the soil will drop to the bottom and the water. And so I love that you said that we associate with the dust, we associate with the dirt. And that Christian saying, no, don't hate the sinner,
hate the sin. Yeah,
there's a part for me also in the wellness community. I feel like a lot of people get stuck on healing.
Oh yeah,
it becomes their identity. Have you seen that?
Right.
It's like
I'm always healing.
I'm never going to stop healing because if I stop healing, who am I?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I see that a lot of frustration comes from that within people because it feels good to. It feels like progress. It looks like progress. I'm healing. But the way I've seen a lot of people level up or step out of that zone is then by using their experience to help others start their own process, you know?
Yeah.
And ultimately, we have to recognize that that gift of healing others and lifting others is coming from the association of God. I think that oftentimes we feel that it's us that's doing the work.
Mm.
And I think that a part of this falling upwards piece for me is recognizing that in my association with a higher power, in my association with Krishna, in my association with God, I'm able to lift myself up above that dirt and that glass and then also give to others. That empowerment isn't self-brought. It's it's not, okay, fine, it's innate that we all love each other and whatnot, but the empowered state of being loving is done through the empowered.
Yeah, and it takes the pressure off to know that
straight up,
it's coming through you, not from you.
From you, yeah.
You know,
I think that's the danger piece when it comes to like being a spiritual leader. And we were talking off camera about this, but this messiah complex that I'm going to heal the world, you know, I'm going to grow a beard and locks.
I'm the chosen one.
I'm the chosen one, man. I'm going to do it. I'm going to revolutionize the world, damn it. Yeah. And then recognizing that, I'm also like, I'm relying on something greater.
Yeah.
It's heartwarming to recognize that.
Totally. And it's also faith-giving to move in the positive direction, because you know your own limitations.
Yeah, yeah.
You know there's only so far you can go. But to know that you can be driven by something which is beyond this world, by something which exists in an ever-expanding world of perfection, there's no limits to what you can achieve in this life and who you can heal and what you can do. But it's not on your own merit.
Mm. Yeah.
It's fueled by your sincerity, but it's totally dependent on something outside of yourself. And I think that's a beautiful complex to have. Mm.
The most spiritual people I've ever met in my life, for me, are people that acknowledge that that potency, that that shakti, that strength is coming from something greater than themselves.
100%.
And, I think that it's really important that we recognize that, yeah, I know there's a whole movement of self-made, I started from the bottom, now I'm here. But, like, okay, fine, I acknowledge that you put in some endeavor and put in some hard work. But when you look at it objectively, there's people that put in a lot of hard work that never receive money. Mm. There's people that put in hours at McDonald's that never actually make... Okay, maybe I'm slagging off McDonald's. I'm sorry if you're working. But the point is that you could be working a tough job and there's someone that's actually working like a super, super like easy job and earning millions. Yeah. And, you know, there is a piece around understanding that I can't do everything to heal myself. I can't... There's no amount of endeavor that's going to equate to purification. Mm. Endeavor is there, yes, but the other part of the equation in bhakti that we know about is mercy and empowerment and blessing, and you know you're endowed with something that's nothing to do with us.
Don't you say this thing about receiving rather than achieving?
Yeah,
is that it? That yeah. mindset.
Yeah, when we are practicing spirituality, we have to enter into the mindset of being a receiver rather than being an achiever. Mm-hmm. Because I think oftentimes we can get into, I've chanted this much, I've fasted this much, I've traveled this much, I've shaked hands with this many gurus, achieve, achieve, achieve. But rather let's see it as I've received, because it ain't got nothing to do with me.
Mm.
This whole, this kind of touching on a slightly different topic, but this whole concept of endeavor. So in the Gita, we see Krishna saying, and one of the biggest messages anyone who knows the Gita receives from it is, practice with detachment. So endeavor, but do not be attached to the results. Do everything you can, but don't worry about the results.
Mm.
And I always find that that's a complex thing to get involved in, because with every endeavor of healing, you're putting in effort, putting investment, time, energy. You want some results.
Mm.
You want some, especially on the healing journey, right? I put in all this time and what? I'm not healed?
Mm.
But I think what it's really going at there is, the result is not dependent on your endeavor. It's not actually dependent on you. And therefore, when we truly understand that, we can release ourselves from the misery that may come, right? I don't know what you found when you've tried to implement that in your life. It's always been an interesting one.
One thing I have found is that often the test comes in a reward.
Mm.
The test comes in a reward.
For instance... We think that a test is like a difficulty or a trial or an obstacle.
Yeah.
But sometimes the test looks like, you know, being given some opulence or some opportunity or some prestige or some position.
I like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you can continue to realize that actually there's something more for me than this, right? Then we can be given more than we could ever have achieved ourselves.
Yeah.
So for me, that's a really exciting prospect, is like leaving room for God, leaving room for the magic to happen in our lives.
Mm.
Because, you know, there's no way when I met you, Radhika, there's no way I thought, you know, 3 years ago, okay, I'm going to be sat in a room, you know, on a podcast, you know, like talking some deep stuff. I just didn't know that was the trajectory.
Yeah.
And this might lead to something else, and that might lead to something else, and so on. But it's not something I could have ever brought about for myself. Yeah. And I try and see every opportunity and every blessing in my life like that, you know. I haven't put this here myself, but it's a gift. The thing is, when we receive a gift, it's actually hurtful if you say, I give a gift to you. I'm hurt if you don't open it.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I've put all this effort and, you know, I've put all this love into getting you this thing. I've given it to you and you're just indifferent.
Mm, yeah.
You know, not only have you not used it, you haven't even opened it.
Yeah.
So when opportunities come into my life, I think, okay, I'm not going to be humble about this and just push it aside. Let me take it and open it and use it, because I feel like that gift, it's coming from somewhere higher. Yeah. And that's the thing that's going to be most pleasing to God, is to actually engage that. And if I do that well, if I pass that test, I might get given something else and in that way. So that's kind of how I navigate it.
And you just raise a really interesting point, because it brought me back to something that happened for me, is learning how to engage in the world with a spiritual consciousness doesn't always look the same, right? So when I left the monastery, I was looking for my first job and I was struggling for ages applying for a job. And a friend of mine told me to apply for this speaking role. I spoke at this firm about, you know, life lessons, leadership lessons from the Ramayana, right? And they all loved it.
That's deep, bro.
Huh?
You at a company.
Life
lessons from Ramayana.
Yeah, leadership and life lessons from
They
loved it. Yeah, it was really good. Oi. I mean, something I'd done loads of times. I just had a different audience. And anyway, my future boss was actually in that crowd.
Wow.
Right? And she came up to me afterwards. She goes, oh, yeah, great stuff. Like,
Your current boss as well?
This was my first job. Okay. And I knew that she was looking to hire, right? And so she goes, yeah, I'm looking to hire. I go, yeah, I mean, I'm looking for a job. And then she goes, well, meet me across the road on the bar. Let's have a chat. And I'm like, all right.
Mm.
And mind you, that's the first time I stepped foot in a bar in like 7 years.
Orange juice, please.
And so, literally.
Sparkling water, please.
This is how it went down. So we roll into the place and she's like, yep, so what are you drinking? And I'm like, Pinnock. I'm like, just a glass of water. She goes, oh yeah, completely forgot. You were like a monk, weren't you? I was like, yeah. It's like, I don't drink. Water's good. We have a chat anyway. We have a couple of interviews later and she gives me the job. In this reward that I'm receiving, right? Actually, do you want to hear something more funny?
Yeah, I want to.
I'll give you the jokes right now. This is hilarious. This is how, like, this is like 101 of what it feels like for a monk moving into the corporate world, right?
Yeah.
So, I get the job, and I'm getting my job with this other girl as well, who's working in our team. So, my boss gets us up, and we introduce ourselves to the wider team, right? So, it's about 20 people there, all on our floor. It's quite senior levels, junior levels, everyone, and we're introducing ourselves. And so my colleague, she introduces herself, like, I'm so-and-so. I used to work with, you know, scientists, doing training for scientists in that world, cancer research. Great, amazing, incredible. Oh, fantastic, lovely to have you here. All right. So they go like, all right, who are you? So I'm like, yes, I'm so-and-so, and I used to be a monk. They all look at me like, oh, yeah, wow, that's interesting. That's
plausible.
That's different. It was the most awkward situation.
Oh, damn.
Because they just didn't know how to respond.
Right.
They were like, oh, they're probably thinking, why the hell are you here?
Mm.
What value do you bring to this company?
Mm.
Right. Why on earth did my boss hire me and give me an opportunity and a chance here? Right. It was so fascinating to see to see that, because monks have no social status. We don't, right? We're nobodies. We're, it's said that monastic life is that for the spiritually dead. Or the materially dead, sorry.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Anyway, so I get this job. And through this job, I'm having this complex, because in the corporate world, you've got to be pretty cutthroat. You've got to be pretty dominant. You need to really call the shots. You need to really make things move. And as a monk, I'm like, just learned to be like really humble, like really submissive, like really conscious about how I talk to people. And so like you're mentioning, Kaylee, like when you get a reward, we need to use it in the right way. We need to approach it in the right way. And I wasn't using it. I was approaching my material reward with like a kind of a false application of spirituality. A false
like sacrifice, false austerity.
A false application of humility,
yeah, I call it. Gotcha.
And then the job just didn't work out for me. You know, because I didn't appreciate that reward in what that was there to actually give me, right? Obviously, my life like turned out very different after, and it was actually a great opportunity which led me on to better things. But just as you were speaking, I thought like... we get so many rewards from life, and it's so important that we approach them with the right manner in the way that we intend to use them, as well as how they're intended to be used for whatever, wherever it takes us in the future, right?
Yeah, and I guess in relation to this verse, it's like when we have things that we are conscious are our enemies, internal enemies, to use that.
Yeah.
You know, I think sometimes we get so bogged down in trying to purify things, but rather actually sometimes the biggest way in which we can serve others is by recognizing that we've got something wrong, something inside that we need to purify. So it's not only in the good, it's not only in the bad, but recognizing the gifts in both.
The transfer of energy. The transfer of energy, right?
The transfer of energy.
Well, you can turn hate into something really productive.
Yeah.
Or you can use it to destroy yourself, right?
Yeah. Anyway, thanks again. You both look so good all the
Thank
time.
Thank you.
Can you like tell people where you're shopping?
Actually, I got this shirt in Jaipur last year. It was bought by a friend. This is Anoki, and it's block print.
Okay.
And yeah.
Do you have to wash it like really sensitively on that?
Well, because they're like natural dyes.
Hand wash.
Yeah, you have to be a little careful.
Looks nice though.
Thank you.
You've always got jazzy shirts.
Thanks. I try my best.
You do. Yeah.
Thanks.
You pull it off. And what are you wearing, my friend?
What am I? I feel like a model.
I don't even know if you want to know this stuff, but
they probably don't. There. But like, let's get some sponsorship out there.
Yeah.
So we're wearing some Adidas trainers.
Yeah. They're really nice. Show them to the camera.
They're actually recyclable Adidas trainers.
Wow.
100% recyclable Adidas. Fully sustainable, great from the environment. Check them out. And
Adidas, sponsor us now.
I feel like we need to kind of gradually work our way up to Adidas. So
yeah.
We're not quite there yet.
If you're a rich person and you've got a couple of thousand lying around, sponsor the podcast. It would really help. We're doing this out of our own pockets right now.
You can get more of Kaylee and Nam for a bit of sponsorship. Yeah.
Anyway, it's been a great episode. Thank you both so much for your wisdom, for your insights, for your humor, for your friendship, for your love, for your
I love you.
I love you too.
I love you. Bromance for the win.
Totally, man.
All right, see you guys on the next episode for Soul's Sake. Drop us a comment, share this conversation far and wide, and I'll see you very soon. Lots of love. Peace out. If you enjoyed this podcast, you'll love my interview with Raghunath Kapo on his fascinating journey from New York punk to monk. Go check it out.
The guy just said, I've got a gun, and I'm going to kill everyone tonight. And it was just one of those wake-up calls that you get when you hear like, oh, tonight's the night. I forgot that we all die. It's one of these things as a monk you read every day, that life is temporary, your body's temporary, people leaving their bodies, etc. But you'd never think it's going to happen to you that day.